Welcome and thank you for joining us for today's IBM teleconference ZOS version 1 release 9 for your demanding data serving needs. Today's teleconference will last approximately 60 minutes and will include a live question and answer session. In this teleconference, you will learn about the latest features of ZOS version 1.9 and the value they deliver, plus details on other product announcements. The speaker for today's teleconference is Gitta Grubberg, IBM ZOS Marketing Manager. At this time, I would like to hand it over to our speaker, Gitta Grubberg.
Hello and welcome, and thank you for joining us on our call today. It's another year and another release of ZOS. Today, we're going to cover the value of ZOS version 1, release 9. We have a lot of great technology here for your most demanding data serving needs. As a reminder, ZOS 1.9 is available for ordering and shipment now. It was generally available in September. Let's skip over to chart number 3. Today we'll be covering why ZOS 1.9 is so good for your data serving needs. We'll be covering some of the release's most robust security features and its capabilities to be a centralized security hub for protecting applications, data, and transactions. Then we'll be covering what the release has for application development. And then going over improvements in our classic strengths of the platform, in scalability, availability, and other optimization capabilities. And along the way, you will see we are working on the TCO for the platform by introducing new specialty engine exploiters. We are also simplifying, streamlining, or otherwise improving operations. The next chart, chart number 4, here are some headlines. On any given day, you can find very similar articles with regard to security and security breaches here. The point here is that security is still very big news for all of us, and it's important consideration going forward with your IT decisions. And that brings me to the next chart, chart number 5. Let's start off our discussion with ZOS system integrity. Now, this is not new, and it's not exclusive to ZOS 1.9. IBM defined system integrity back in 1973 when we introduced MVS. What is new today is that when we announced ZOS 1.9, we updated the ZOS system integrity statement. It is intended to prevent unauthorized application programs, subsystems, and users from gaining access, circumventing, disabling, altering, or obtaining control of key ZOS system processes and resources, unless otherwise allowed by you in your installation. Below that, you will see some of the technology we use to define system integrity, and below that statement, furthermore, IBM will take action to resolve any case where we found that the above system integrity can be circumvented. Please be aware that system integrity is not the same as security or data integrity. System integrity is the inability to bypass the locks that we have placed around the ZOS system resources. Now, the system integrity statement is a pretty assertive statement from IBM on its confidence on the ZOS platform, and it's in writing. For those of us experienced in ZOS system integrity, there is something new that is in the following. The ZOS system integrity statement, as we have presented it here in writing and in the URL you have below, encompasses all of ZOS, all components and features. The older statement covered MBS, essentially the ZOS-based control program. We feel that system integrity statement, together with some of the other ZOS platform features, may be really helpful proof points in addressing compliance requirements that you might need going forward with some of your security requirements. Speaking of compliance, in the next chart, we have the ZOS security server, RACF. RACF, in and of itself, has many inherent capabilities which can address security and compliance guidelines. As you probably all know, or many of you know, RACF always has had consistent and comprehensive logging capabilities. RACF reports events and logs this information into SMF Type 80 records and provides a utility, the RACF report writer, and can report on the following, anything like unauthorized attempts to enter the system. It can track total use of a sensitive resource, identify resources that are targets, identify users, and track user activity. And RACF logs all this information, date, time, and number of users entering the system, and this is helpful for auditing capabilities. And for those of you who need additional validation or audit capabilities, I do want to mention that the Tivoli Compliance Insight Log Continuity Reporting Function, it's formerly Console Insight, can help you address these compliance requirements as well with this really great tool with a great intuitive graphical user interface for that. Now, RACAC is not a static product. It has been added to and built upon for many, many years, and we've added new features and extended its capabilities. RACAC now supports passwords and passphrases up to 100 characters, so this makes it easy to share passwords and tokens and keyrings between various systems. Please note that passwords and passphrases between 14 and 100 characters is for IBM middleware exploitation in the future, very soon in the future. In ZOS 1.7, RACF has added pass ticket support, and these make it much easier to develop applications that can span multiple systems and that can use in RACF services. In ZOS 1.8, RACF also added for support for virtual keyrings, and that can help eliminate the need to manually create multiple real keyrings with a variety of digital certificates. And in ZOS 1.9, RACF, as well as ICSF, supports the PKCS number 11 standard. PKCS number 11 is a programming interface that's an industry-accepted standard, and it's commonly used for cryptographic applications. So this means that any application, whether it's your own application or an ISV, that's been written to the PKCS standard and can now be recompiled and run on ZOS, and that application can now take advantage of RACF or ICSF security capabilities. Also in 1.9, RACF supports Java. This allows for a very consistent and simplified programmatic access to RACF from Java programs. Now in the next chart, I know RACF has a lot of new capabilities, but sometimes it can be still very difficult to work with RACF. Some things are not very intuitive. And for those of you seeking a simpler way for working with RACF, may be interested in a few of the Tivoli Z-Secure products, particularly the Z-Secure Admin and its companion product, Z-Secure Visual. Z-Secure Admin has a lot of great management capabilities, and Z-Secure Visual really is a very intuitive graphical user interface that helps reduce the need for scarce RACF expertise. It's run on a Microsoft Windows client, and it makes RACF administration really nice, and I've heard a lot of great compliments from a lot of customers on this product. Also, there's additional programming improvements for RACF as well. For example, in ZOS 1.7 and 1.8, we have the health checker, and in that time frame, we added several health checks specific to RACF to help monitor RACF configurations. These health checks provide alerts if some of these security standards and configurations haven't been maintained. It's great for not only providing automatic help in taking precautions against threats, but it's also valuable for security audit reasons as well. In the previous chart, I mentioned RACF support of Java. So not only do Java applications have easier access to RACF, you do too. You can now do RACF user and group administration. All can be from Java as well. In 1.9, we introduced a new facility called SystemRex, or SysRex, and I'll be covering that a little bit later, that allows Rex execs to run in an authorized state outside of the TSO environment. SysRex can be used to help automate RACF administration and operator tasks. And also, the new Tivoli directory server, this was announced with ZOS 1.8 and made available earlier this year, is new and improved LDAP server for ZOS, and allows for simple programmatic access to DB2 and flat file backend, as well as RACF directories as well, useful for doing a lot of lookups and directory information. Okay, next chart. Enough about RACF. I know not everyone does use it, but I do want to cover some of the other security capabilities that may help meet some of the other security standards and guidelines that are out there. One industry standard which might be of interest to you is the Payment Card Industry Data Security Standard. Now, the PCI DSS was developed by major credit card companies as a guideline to help organizations like yourselves that process card payments and to prevent credit card fraud by hacking and various other security issues. A company processing, storing, or transmitting credit card numbers must be PCI DSS compliant or may risk losing the ability to process credit card payments. Now, PCI DSS has 12 requirements, and I've really simplified and lumped them together in these 6 requirements on the left-hand side here on the categories. And on the right-hand side, you can see some of the ZOS and System Z capabilities that can help meet these guidelines. Now, ZOS and System Z, you know, do not provide a complete PCI DSS standard solution. Okay, but it could be argued that our platform, the one right here, the System Z, provides more security features that meet these guidelines than any other platform for a more complete solution. And you know it's all been tested together. And so that's an added peace of mind right there. Some of the ZOS features I want to point out is that ZOS 1.8 is EAL4 certified under common criteria earlier this year, and that ZOS 1.9 has been submitted for certification. The ZOS communication server has tremendous functionality in not only applying security features like IPsec, ATTLS, intrusion detection services, but has added the capability of centralized policy-based networking for simplified networking. The ZOS encryption facility for ZOS version 1 release 2 was available in January of this year and has open PGP support, which supports decrypting by any software that is written to that standard. New to 1.9 is the ISO format 3 pin block, which is the latest standard in encrypting of pin numbers. And of course, ZOS PKI services, the ability to be a complete digital certificate authority, all within ZOS. And we'll cover that on the next chart. I'm not going to get too much more on this, but I want to mention that my teammate, Mary Moore, will be hosting a call on PCI DSS later in the month. So please keep an eye out for her session. Now let's take a closer look at ZOS Public Key Infrastructure Services, PKI services, on chart number 9. ZOS provides a complete support for digital certificates with full lifecycle management. With PKI services in ZOS, you can create, manage digital certificates, leverage existing ZOS mainframe investments and skills, and this can provide a really significant cost savings over other digital certificate options. PKI Services is a full digital certificate solution. It can create digital certificates, renew them, do revocation of them, and overall management administration of them. On other platforms, and applications using digital certificates may require you to go to third-party vendors to purchase and manage these certificates, which could be very costly on a per-certificate basis. This can be significant expense if you want to use these certificates to establish identification or communication between your employees, business partners, your own customers, and of course you can use these certificates for your own network and servers and devices to create virtual private networks. With PKI services that are built into ZOS, you have the capability to create as many digital certificates as you need in whatever numbers you choose, and with relatively little cost of the MIPS and processor power. This can make it very cost-effective for you to have digital certificate solution within your business. And we do have an example of a feedback where a customer really loves this, and they've calculated savings of several million dollars a year to secure their virtual private network using their own digital certificates from ZOS PKI services, as opposed to buying everything from a third-party vendor. Well, security is not only in the server. Security is in the network, too. And on chart number 10, I want to cover the ZOS communication server. Now, the comm server does a lot. It does high-quality services for transactions and data. It supports TCP, IP, and SNA, and does file transfer and telnet, and it supports Samba, Enterprise Extender, and Linux Samba, and much more. All these functions have really been updated constantly over the years. But I want to focus on something new that the comm server has done in the past couple of years, and it is its value in terms of policy-based networking. ZOS Communication Server as a whole can help simplify overall network and network security management through its policy-based networking. That means you can define networking policies all in one spot and apply them uniformly across your IT environment to a variety of TCP/IP nodes. Now, it doesn't do this for all of the comm server functions. You can do policy-based networking, centralized management of this for the following functions: intrusion detection services, quality of service, IPsec, application transparent, transport layer security, and the new functions in Release 9, which is network security services and TCP/IP policy-based routing. Let's start from the bottom there. Application transparent, TLS, and IPsec. Really valuable in terms of securing the network from your applications. The policy-based networking does provide value, and you can simplify the application of these network security settings centrally and have them distributed remotely over many nodes. The other value of this is that both these networking security technologies are application transparent. They're in the transport layer or the TCP/IP layer, so there's no changes to your applications. And new to 1.9 is ATTLS support for FTP and TN3270. In ZOS 1.8, the ComServer added quality of services and intrusion detection services. Now, these get pretty interesting now because now we have policy-driven, rules-based responses to help you maintain the quality of the service on your network, as well as provide responses and protection against suspicious activities. You can isolate and deny and shut down things depending upon what the policies you are decided to choose for these functions. In 1.9, we also introduced network security services for the management of digital certificates. Now, if some of you have shared RACF, you probably already have a lot of that functionality already. But for those not, this could be an option for you. And where things get very interesting is the TCP/IP policy-based routing introduced in 1.9. Truly a step towards customizing the network to meet your application's needs. You can basically separate your applications based on anything that's in the TCP/IP address, whether it's the job name, ports, protocol, addresses, and even sending things off to different security zones or bandwidth zones. So again, a very, very powerful statement right there. But to make applying these network-based policies a bit easier, the ComServer also added the configuration assistant for the ZOS communication server, and that's on chart 11. Now, there's a little bit of background to this because it was originally introduced, this graphical user interface was originally introduced with ZOS 1.7. The ComServer introduced the ZOS Network Security Configuration Assistant, which combined IPsec and ATTLS. And then in 1.8, they added intrusion detection services with quality of services. And so at that point, they renamed it the Configuration Assistant for ZOS Communication Server. So anyone jumping from 7 to 8 to 9 will see a name change there in that product here. This product, no charge web download. With ZOS 1.9, IBM Com server adds to the Configuration Assistant TCP/IP policy-based routing and the network security services function. So now you can have all that centralized configuration of those services. The Configuration Assistant also adds ships with best practices with default configurations, which makes it easier to set up to begin with, and perform self-checks and reports if there's any discrepancies going forward. And the feedback on this has been very good as well. It's tremendously helpful, it simplifies configuration, and it's quick and easy. So it's a great tool here. This tool is great for configuring new nodes. So if you already have a lot of nodes already configured for these, it cannot read existing configurations that are remote. It can do it centrally and send them out. The ZOS Communication Server has other good news as well, and not just what we've gone over in policy-based routing. On chart number 12 here, I'd like to cover what it has in terms of ZIP-assisted IPsec. This was announced earlier this year and made available in late July. Now, IPsec, what is that? It's an open networking standard used to create highly secure connections between two points in an enterprise, basically encrypting the TCP/IP packets. And it's very good because you can define it such you can have end-to-end encryption for an entire transaction. Now, IPsec on ZOS is not new. The IPsec was integrated into the ZOS communication server with ZOS 1.7, and we had a lot of other features there in terms of integrity, data privacy, and packet filtering. What it introduced, what the ComServer introduced with 1.8, is that now the ComServer allows IPsec processing to take advantage of ZIPs. This ZIP-assisted IPsec function moves most of the IPsec processing, that's the encryption and decryption, otherwise number crunching, from the general purpose processors and puts them on the ZIPs. And so this can help make IPsec processing much more cost-effective on the platform. And we do have a customer, Svenska Handelsbanken, who really do like this function. And we say thank you very much to them. They find truly this is a great value to them in securing their networks and meeting their needs. Now, why would you want to do end-to-end encryption from ZOS? That's on slide number 13. Currently, much of the network encryption is currently done today on network devices, and that's fine. Network devices do this well, and they are fast and inexpensive. But this can lead to a patchwork of IPsec across your enterprise and potentially leaving large portions of the network unprotected. Well, currently, ZOS is not generally used for IPsec encryption, but with zip-assisted IPsec, it can make it more cost-effective. Why? Because it's getting to be more and more of a need. End-to-end network encryption is becoming more pervasive due to regulatory and enterprise security policy requirements. Furthermore, end-to-end network encryption may be an absolute requirement for those companies who you may have actually outsourced the network. You still need to secure the network and still protect all the data and transactions that are there, but you just don't have ownership of the network anymore. Let's go to chart number 14. Let's get to the heart of the matter here. What IPsec workload is eligible for the ZIP processor? Well, ZIP-assisted IPsec function moves most, not all, of the IPsec processing from the general-purpose processors to the ZIP. ZOS COM server TCP/IP recognizes packets that are IPsec packets and routes a portion of them to an independent enclave SRB. That's the technology behind it. Okay, so it's the work being done in this enclave SRB that is eligible for the ZIP. So now let's take a walk through here. Because it's networking, we have inbound and outbound traffic. Let's look at these two networking conditions a bit more. For inbound operations, that means some sort of IPsec coming in, not initiated by ZOS. For example, traffic coming from some other server or client to ZOS. Okay, all inbound IPsec processing is dispatched to an enclave SRB, and hence it is all eligible for ZIP. Furthermore, any type of outbound responses, because again, we're talking network, there's responses and pings and acknowledgments, all of this is also dispatched to an enclave SRB and eligible for the ZIP. Now, let's look at outbound traffic. This is something where it's IPsec that is being sent out, initiated by your ZOS node. For example, in this particular case, ZOS sending something to a printer. The operation starts out in, not in enclave SRB mode, but TCBs, and therefore it's not eligible for ZIP. But as soon as ZOS receives a response, that's inbound, sends everything to an enclave SRB, and everything, all subsequent outbound IPsec responses and traffic are executed in SRBs. So what does that really mean in terms of workload? Well, for those of you who are doing FTP or bulk data transfers inbound, 100% of IPsec processing is eligible for the ZIP for inbound. What about outbound bulk data transfers and FTPs? Well, since it starts out in TCPs, not all of it's eligible. On average, how much your mileage may vary, about 90% is eligible for the ZIP processor. And what about interactive workloads? By their very nature, they're very interactive, very, very relatively small bits of information being sent back and forth. And it can be estimated, again, it will purely depend upon your applications and workloads, maybe around 30% could be eligible for the ZIP processor. But tell you what, you can actually do some of your own work here. On chart number 15, lists some resources. It lists some of the prerequisites, as well as the communication server and ZIP information, as well as some red books and white papers that will help in terms of sizing guidance for the ZIP-assisted IPsec function. Well, while we're talking about new workloads on specialty engines, let's cover the other big news in specialty engines on chart number 16. This would be ZOS XML system services enabled for the ZAP processor. What is XML? Well, XML stands for Extensible Markup Language, and it's a general-purpose language, and its goal is to facilitate the sharing of structured data across different information systems. And though it's still evolving, it's rapidly becoming a de facto standard for data interchange. Because XML has the ability to share data across very many distinct systems, many services-oriented architecture solutions use XML services as part of their underlying technologies. Again, this is a new workload, and it is a vital workload in terms of SOA adoption. So what is ZOS XML System Services? Well, it is an XML parser within ZOS. Now, ZOS already has several parsers. Okay. Okay, there's one in the Java SDK, there's one for COBOL, PL1, and XML Toolkit. This one, ZOS XML System Services, was introduced with ZOS 1.8, and it's a high-speed, low-latency XML parser built into ZOS. Its first IBM exploiter is DB2.9, particularly DB2.9 in new function mode. So what does this mean? What did we announce with ZOS 1.9? IBM announced that ZOS XML System Services is now enabled to exploit the ZAP specialty engine. That means XML parsing performed by XML System Services is eligible to run on the ZAP. And because DB2.9 is expected to be the first exploiter of this, it's basically any XML data parsing from locally connected applications that's executing in TCP mode. Also announced with ZOS 1.9 that IBM has added C and C++ support for this ZOS XML System Services. So that means not only vendors, but you yourselves could write applications to exploit ZOS XML System Services and the TCO benefits of the SAP processor. So for those of you who are currently investigating the deployment of XML services in your enterprise, SOA-based architectures, and making XML investment decisions right now, but you still like the data serving and centralized capabilities of DB2 on Z, now you can consider XML on ZOS with its TCO benefits of ZAP for these future implementations. We also have a few statements of direction with regard to XML system services. IBM intends to enable the XML system services to take additional advantage of ZIPs. Now, I better explain this a little bit because we just talked about SAPs. In reality, any remote application coming in over DRDA, over TCP/IP, will automatically get partially redirected to the ZIP processor. It doesn't matter if it's SQL or XML queries. So there already is a benefit that's business as usual with the ZIP processor. What this future statement intends is that ZOS will recognize all the ZOS XML system services parsing, and it will send that parsing processing to the ZIP processor. So there'll be an additional benefit for ZIP processing over distributed environments, making it equal to that of the ZAP processor. An additional statement of direction, as part of comprehensive plan, IBM plans to extend and expand the use of this parser, ZOS XML System Services, and it intends to enhance XML Toolkit so that parts of the workload from the toolkit will be eligible to use XML System Services and hence the ZAP processor when available. Also, IBM also intends to add validating parsing to XML System Services. Right now, the current processing doesn't support validation. So basically, this means in the future we'll extend ZAP and ZIP exploitation to include validation parsing as well. So let's look at chart number 17. What does this mean in terms of XML processing and what's eligible for ZAP? Let's take a look what's available today here. Well, middleware applications, particularly DB2, requesting XML system services will have that parsing eligible to execute on the ZAP. In this particular case, the example is DB2.9 running in TCP mode will have, via local connection, will have a portion of this SQL XML executed on the ZAP. And the two examples are there, applications running locally, so that whenever DB2.9 inserts or updates XML data, the data has to be parsed and therefore invokes ZOS XML System Services in the ZAP when present. Same thing can be said for utilities as well. Well, how much DB2.9 work is eligible for the ZAP will depend upon the amount of XML data being processed. We do have a white paper that provides guidance on some recent DB2 laboratory activities with some financial services benchmarks, and found results vary from 17% to 50% roughly. You can look that information up yourselves with regard to DB2.9 and ZOS XML System Services Synergy white paper. Now, looking on chart number 18, if it's a little confusing, yeah, you know, XML processing consists of many, many parts, and it's still evolving. And rollout of XML system services support to the specialty engines will take some time. This chart on page number 18, I think, summarizes the rollout. You can read it from left to right. There's the workload, the examples of the exploiters, when it's available, how much you expect to be redirected, and what are some of the prereqs and requirements. Watch this chart. This chart can be changing and updating a living document in the near future. Well, aside from XML, ZOS has adopted other new application technologies. And on chart number 19, we'll discuss what some of them are. We support a brand new LDAP server. That's the IBM Tivoli Directory Server for ZOS. This was announced with ZOS 1.8. It was made available March of this year. So maybe not everyone may have heard that or saw that news. And for anyone who has adopted LDAP as an application platform in their enterprise or should really look at this product, or anyone who, for example, has looked at the older LDAP on ZOS and maybe didn't like it, well, it's time to look at it again, because this Tivoli Directory Server for ZOS, it's a new base element in ZOS. It's included in ZOS. It's included in ZOS 1.8 and going forward. And it is much improved. It improves everything in terms of performance, scalability, auditability, and availability and ease of use. But probably one of the big benefits is that now not only do we have a nice simplified programmatic access to back-end data like DB2, as well as RACF, as I mentioned earlier, but now this particular version also allows you to use a Unix flat file as a back-end. Well, not all application development products and languages are in ZOS, so there's a lot of new open source products that are out there. And sometimes folks do not like to have open source inside ZOS, so what we do is we port them over and we include them as part of ported tools for ZOS. And the next three line items there are several features that recently came out with regard to ported tools. The first one is Perl. That came out last year, but I do want to mention it because anyone who's looked at an old port of Perl and maybe didn't like it, it's time to look at this again because this new port of Perl is much better than the previous one. It's pre-configured and pre-compiled and addresses previous issues associated with ASCII and EBCDIC conversions. Perl is a very popular general-purpose programming language, and it's used in Unix and other computing platforms. And it could be very useful for some of your applications as well. Came out earlier this year is now PHP. Now, PHP is a general-purpose scripting language that's well-suited for web development. So it's got a syntax that's similar to that of C, and making it really easy to use. And it allows one to embed program statements directly within HTML pages. PHP is popular in the computing industry because it's used on a variety of platforms, but one of the main uses is because it can do dynamic and rich web pages. Many internet sites, you'll notice in the URL, you see a little PHP in there, because it allows users to generate customized web pages, and it can easily communicate with databases. And so this allows, and this particular port of Perl contains a good access to DB2 backend via the ODBC driver. Also new recently announced is the part of ported tools. It's the supplementary toolkit for ZOS. And what's the supplementary toolkit? Well, that provides miscellaneous utilities that are commonly used on other platforms, and now they're available on the Z platform as well. And in this particular release, in this supplementary toolkit, we have BZIP2 is provided. BZIP2 is a powerful data compressing utility. It's widely used on other platforms and industries. It has been made available to run on ZOS XML system services. So again, some powerful application development capabilities as part of ported tools. Okay, not all application development is done with completely new languages. Of course, ZOS has improved the way we develop traditional applications as well. And on chart 20, we'll take a look at what we've done with C and C++. With 1.9, we introduced a brand new Metal C option for ZOS XL, C, C++. This takes C and takes it out of just application development and puts it into system program development as well. There's no language environment or runtime dependencies. You can embed assembler statements into a C program, and the Metal C produces assembler source, which is very important because it certainly is a lot easier to program in C than it is in assembler for some of our system-level programs. C, C++ also supports new decimal floating point formats. This is in conjunction with the hardware announcement earlier in April, as well as the IBM initiative in general for supporting decimal floating point that System Z and System P are doing together. So ZOS 1.9 XL C, C++ supports decimal floating point in addition to the traditional hexadecimal and binary formats as well. Very good for financial applications who need the precision that decimal floating point offers. C, C++ offers also some performance improvements. We've developed some new instructions, new options, so that existing code can be recompiled to take advantage of these improvements for slight tweaks and improvements to performance. C, C++ also has reached beyond System Z, and that there's additional hooks and benefits where it links into IBM Rational Developer for System Z. Now, this was previously named IBM WebSphere Developer for System Z. So now Excel, C, C++, support for development, editing, content assist, and enhanced code navigation through Rational Developer for System Z. The ZOS DBX support, which is the Unix debugger, has also been expanded to support Rational Developer debugger for System Z as well as the developer itself. It's a really nice graphical user interface. It's interactive. It's got source level debug, and it'll let you examine, monitor, and control ZOS Unix programs written in C, C++, as well as assembler. Well, while we're talking about Rational Developer for System Z, again, this is the same product that used to be called WebSphere Developer for System Z, on chart 21, this product in and of itself can help simplify application development immensely. Rational Developer for System Z provides a really great integrated development environment for developing a lot of applications on C. It does dynamic web applications, including Java, Java 2, Enterprise Edition, JSD, HTML. You can do traditional COBOL and PL1 applications, of course, as well as integrating Kix, IMS web services, and integrating them using with SOA-based tools. And on the left-hand side, you'll see currently the current green screen way of example of correcting a COBOL source file. And on the right-hand side, you have the Rational WebSphere Developer for System Z way of doing it. And really, Rational Developer for Z offers so many advantages over traditional mainframe development environment. It's a single environment for programming tasks like design, code, and debugging, with this all in the same user interface. And there's a lot of productivity features like syntax checking, JCL generation, visual debugging, and it's all integrated with user assistance in there as well. Again, a really fine product. Anyone who is at all interested in doing application development on System Z really must look at this product. Now, on page 22, we've also simplified some other areas of operations and programming. I'd mentioned earlier ZOS 1.9, we support a brand new facility called System Rex. It allows Rex code to run outside the TSO environment. It basically means you can run Rexex from an operator console and run it in an authorized environment. Well, this has some benefits. You can embed Rex commands from assembler program, and this can help automate a lot of operator functions. It can help get to web-based service a lot easier, and as well as use some of the Rex parsing strengths as well. This is available no-charge web download for ZOS 1.8. And if you're going to do it for 1.8, you need the Rex alternate library for that. And it's native in 1.9. And for anyone interested in more information on SysRex, you have to look in the ZOS MVS Programming Authorized Assembler Services Guide right there. There's no separate documentation for it. So it's in that that book right there. Also for 1.9, we've been Health Checker. I know a lot of you are using Health Checker. That's not new. We've had this out since ZOS 1.6. So for 1.9, of course, we add new health checks for a variety of systems there. And furthermore, Health Checker now supports checks written in the brand new System Rex facility that I mentioned right above there. You can write your own checks. You know, it keeps an eye on your own log files and things that you know sometimes it always trips up your system. So it's a good capability. We already talked about the configuration assistant for ZOS Comm Server and how it can simplify application of network policies. Hardware Configuration Manager. Oh, this has been great. Most of the improvements were in ZOS 1.8, but for anyone who needs help with I/O management, this product, it's an optionally priced feature of ZOS, might be for you. A ton of new function and time-saving wizards in ZOS 1.8. The Hardware Configuration Manager provides centralized I/O manager with one process for defining and documenting System Z processors and switches and end devices, and it's easier to use. It really is. There's time-saving wizards. There's a subsystem creation wizard, which takes usually 2 hours of manual configuration and reduces it to 5 minutes. And there's also Copy Wizard that also saves hours of manual configuration time. And when I say it's easy and intuitive, it really is. Our own IBM experience is such that we've had a brand new hire sit in front of the hardware configuration manager and used it without very much training at all. We've also had some improvements in ISPF. It's always improvements in terms of the availability and tracking of changes. But the big news in 1.9 is that now you can edit and browse Unix and ASCII files with ISPF. One editor does it all, and I think your system programmers will really like that. There's some other aspects in improving operations that we have in 1.9. And it's on page 23. One is we've improved the console processing with message flood automation. This used to be part of GDPS. So anyone in GDPS, geographically dispersed parallel sysplex, already has it. It was available with 1.6 PTFs, and now it's available natively with 1.8 and 1.9. And this is, you don't need to have a GDPS or parallel sysplex. It's for anyone who is experienced in message floods and don't want to deal with message floods anymore. Message flood automation helps prevent messages from being displayed on the console and from before the buffers begin to fill, before console queues them up for automation, before they get propagated to other systems. So again, really a long time coming, and a lot of folks will really like this capability here. Another thing in 1.9 is, I know with message flood automation, we talk about too much information, and in some cases here, maybe you want to collect more information. With 1.9, we now can have SMF can now be configured to use the system logger to write to data to a log stream. So that means this, traditionally, SMF has written things to data sets, which tends to be quite slow, and it could eat up a lot of system resources. I know perhaps some of you during periods of peak utilization might actually turn off SMF data collection just to get through those periods of peak utilization and try to get every amount of processor capacity you can get. Now with this capability, you don't have to do that. You can keep collecting your data by sending it to a system logger and to a log stream, which collects a lot of data. This performance, the amount of data, is significant. When a coupling facility uses it, is many, many, many times the data rates are being supported. Of course, DASI only is much faster too, but just the real significance is those with coupling facility support. So you can specify different record types to be written to separate log streams or the same record type to multiple log streams. You can actually now identify the data that your end users want and your analysts want, and so separate them into separate log streams. And then not only that, you can retain those log streams for different periods of time for auditing purposes. Now, for those of you who said, well, what about the availability of System Logger if we're going to start sending all this information through it? Well, we did tweak it, so we've improved the availability of the System Logger to support many multiple concurrent migrated data set requests. So, again, this could be helpful going forward. Another area that we've improved for ZOS is improving system utilization. Well, this was announced actually earlier in April this year. It's put on 1.8, but I wanted to mention it because I think this is a good capability. A new function in 1.8 allows you to apply a capacity limit not only to a single LPAR, but also to a group of LPARs running all on a single CAC. This is known as group LPAR, group capacity limits. And so what this can do is, it's available only on Z9, EC, and BC, and available as ZOS 1.8 and later. And over your course of your four-hour rolling averages can produce some significant results. One is it can help reduce the amount of capping, where individual LPARs might be capped in their capacity and might not be able to grow anymore. And also, it has the ability to get you some more white space over the course of your four-hour average by better and efficiently using your system resources a bit better. Again, a great capability right there. Moving forward on page 25, parallel sysplex. Every year we improve parallel sysplex. I can probably have 5 pages on it for what's been done in 7, 8, and as well as 9. So in 1.9, we have some improvements in terms of system-managed coupling facility structure duplexing. We've streamlined the protocols, if you choose to streamline them, and this can make duplexing a lot faster and make it a viable option for you if you haven't used it before. And this function is planned to be available first quarter of next year. We've improved a couple of data set I/O performance and throughput, so anyone uses those will seek a benefit right there. Sysplex Failure Manager to ZOS has been improved with more automatic identification, removal, and even termination of six systems. RMF support for coupling facility utilization has been improved, so that's always good for reporting there. And coupling facility management has been simplified, improved as well. We've had a coupling facility reallocate process that's been shortened, so it moves things along faster. We've added a coupling facility maintenance mode, which makes maintenance a lot easier. And we've improved on the reporting and performance and problem determination, so it helps move problem determination a lot easier. Another parallel Sysplex improvement, which it was done in 1.8, but I think it's worth it to mention here as well, because I know a lot of you folks might be sitting on ZOS 1.7, and you might be jumping over 1.8 to get over to 1.9. So you'll be inheriting a lot of the 1.8 capabilities. And so this is the Workload Manager, services for troubled applications. Now, what is a troubled application? Well, there are some instances where where the software or subsystem, a transaction has not completed properly. It might be a full queue, it might be abending, and the application subsystem is returning an improper response. It's quickly. And Workload Manager might view this response as, well, Workload Manager meeting its goals and start sending more workload there where it should not to be. And these services basically allows the subsystem or the application to send a message to Workload Manager to say, stop, don't send anything to me. So again, some additional intelligence here to keep your system up and running. On slide 26, we have some of our classic capabilities here on scalability, performance, and availability. The big news here is, well, big news, 54-way support, and that includes the sum of general-purpose CPs, zips, and zaps together within a single system image. And, of course, along with that comes 64-bit GRS and support, which dramatically increases the amount of NQs that can be supported, and most likely the folks who would be using those would be the ones on their way to 54-way support. The comm server has tweaked OSA Express performance a bit with a new function called Dynamic LAN Idle. It adjusts its interrupts and can actually help improve OSA performance. The language environment has improved its performance, particularly for C, C++, and PLN applications using heap pools, and any applications using long-long division and long-long multiplication. We've improved Unix file system, ZFS availability, by reducing latch contention and improving some of the functionality there. And every year we improve RRS. And, of course, continued rollout of virtual storage relief to support larger workloads. On chart number 27, we'll cover some of the optimization capabilities we have. We've had additional tweaks to Workload Manager. Workload Manager now services are enhanced to recognize zap and zip capacity, so that means better zap and zip workload management if you have those. Workload Manager also introduces trickle support, which is a good capability. In times where a system is 100% busy, sometimes your high priority workload takes up all the resources and your lower priority workload would never get done. So this allows Workload Manager to devote a small amount of processor resource to make sure even discretionary work gets done. Kind of similar vein here is the promotion of canceled jobs. Sometimes you want to cancel something, slower or some other priority workload job, and you can't get it out of the system fast enough because it's a low priority. Now, I know a lot of you may have written exits for this already, but now this capability has been built into Workload Manager in ZOS. A couple of statements here on Enterprise Workload Manager and SIM, the Common Information Model. Basically, wherever these are both IBM strategic directions as well as System Z strategic directions, so wherever Enterprise Workload Manager goes in terms of end-to-end workload management, so goes ZOS Workload Manager in support of them. And also SIM, Common Information Model, it's industry standard used by cross-platform tools for sharing of system resources, and wherever there's a new SIM structure or server or client, we'll be supporting those as well. Going further in terms of optimization and management, I want to change gears just a little bit on chart number 28 and discuss a little bit about a brand new product. It's not a ZOS product. It is a Linux product, but it's a real good one. It's the Integrated Removable Media Manager for the enterprise on System Z. Oh, for short, IRMN. And it is really a Linux product that can help dramatically reduce the total cost of ownership of managing removable media, tape, in data centers. It's got tape virtualization capability and dynamic drive sharing capabilities, and IRMM can increase drive utilization, uptime, your administrator productivity and efficiency. And it, basically what it can do is make several heterogeneous libraries behave like a single reservoir of tapes. Wow, who wants this? Who wants to use this? Well, on chart number 29, according to resources here, that about half of you out there say that media management is becoming a big problem. There's a few tools to help efficiently manage tapes. In fact, there's multiple different tape systems out there, each requiring its own system, ZOS one of them. So there's really hardly any type of efficiencies from dynamic resource sharing. So on chart number 33, IRMM has value for any and all data centers, okay, really, just by its virtualization capabilities of creating a common scratch pool of tapes. It can increase productivity through centralized resources and media management, ultimately reducing TCO, and even help, because it's all centralized, help with centralized security of your tape system as well. But really want to focus on is for those customers who have, or maybe now you should consider DFSMS RMM. There are some real great efficiencies IRMM now has with DFSMS RMM. As you can use the same DFSMS RMM inventory to manage removable media for ZOS and for distributed systems. This basically extends DFSMS RMM function to distributed tapes, managing vaulting, retention, and media retirement. All IRMM function is available through the command line interface so that ZOS and Linux on System Z, as well as other distributed systems, can be managed from a centralized ZOS system. So let's take another look at that on the next chart 31. DFSMS RMM introduced a web service back in ZOS 1.7, and IRMM takes advantage of that and makes the cartridges used by distributed systems available for viewing on DFSMS RMM. IRMM provides basic integration. It is still pretty basic integration with DFSMS RMM, but it can still help manage all removable media in the enterprise from one central point. DFSMS RMM repository is continuously updated by IRMM, and it ensures that, for example, existing volumes in IRMM are added to the RMM repository. When new volume is allocated by IRMM, it is reflected in the DFSMS RMM repository, and, of course, changes of usage and management are recorded as well. IRMM, I mentioned, has a command line interface that for ZOS and permits all ZOS administration to fully administer, control, and monitor the distributed tape infrastructure from ZOS. All IRMM function is available through the command line interface so that both ZOS and Linux system Z tape media can be managed centrally from ZOS. This is a pretty powerful statement in terms of centralizing capabilities. So, again, quick tangent off to another Linux product, but I think it's of great value to you. Now, I know we just covered a lot in ZOS 1.9, but we have one more thing here, the migration checker for ZOS. It was introduced originally for ZOS 1.8, migrations to ZOS 1.8, in December of last year. Well, now it's available and updated to support migrations to ZOS 1.9. What is the migration checker? It is a series of batch programs that can be run individually or together that tests the applicability of migration actions for your system. You can run it on the old system to determine if the migration action is applicable, or you can run it on the new system to determine if what you just migrated has just been migrated successfully. People like it. The feedback has been great. Nice tool. Valuable tool. Great tool. Love the tool. The results are clear, informative, and this is just going to improve as time passes. Please note the migration checker will not perform any migration actions on your system. It just reports on what it finds, and you decide whether to act on it. And, of course, it does not replace the migration workbooks. You should still continue to use the migration workbooks and use this together with them. And this brings us to our last slide. thank you very much for joining me today. I've covered, I think, a lot on ZOS 1.9 as well as 1.8, as well as going beyond the ZOS operating system to cover a couple of other products that might be of interest to you. I hope one message that I can leave with you is that IBM is really firmly committed to ZOS in the mainframe, not just for security and not just for application development, for all aspects of the platform, whether it's scalability and availability, as well as simplifying the platform as well. Now, for those of you who have downloaded the charts, there's a few more in the background where I've given you some additional information. There's one chart that has some key dates, the most important of which you should realize is the last recommended date for ordering ZOS 1.8 via CBPDO or server pack is October 9th, just a few days away. So it's the last day for ordering. If you need to do that now. There's also one more chart on support summary, as well as a chart on migration consideration and information on statements of direction. And prior to going to any questions, I would like you all to participate in a very short telephone survey. So let me know if you like what you heard. I do appreciate your feedback. And with that, operator, back to you.
Thank you, Gitta. Now we would like to ask you to participate in a brief electronic survey. Right after the survey, we will have a live Q&A session with the presenter. Your feedback is important to us, and we do appreciate the time that you take to answer these questions. To participate, simply press the star key followed by the number that best corresponds to your choice. Please listen to all options before making your selection. Question 1. Please evaluate your level of satisfaction with today's teleconference. If you are very satisfied, press star 1. If you are satisfied, press star 2. If you are somewhat unsatisfied, press star 3. If you are not satisfied, press star 4. Please stand by while we allow everyone a chance to signal. Question 2. Was the level of technical information presented in this teleconference at the right level? Press star 1. If it was not technical enough, press star 2. If it was more technical than I needed to hear, press star 3. Once again, we'll pause just a moment to allow everyone a chance to respond. Question 3. We hope that you have enjoyed the teleconference today. Please let us know if you are interested in receiving additional information or follow-up regarding the products discussed today. If yes, press star 1. If no, press star 2. We'll pause just a moment. And with that, we'll conclude our survey. Thank you all for your participation. Now let's move to your questions. To ask your question, please press the star key followed by the digit 1 on your telephone at any time. At this time, I will turn the call over to our speaker while we wait for questions.
Great. Thanks, everyone. Thank you for your time. I realize we're at the top of the hour. But we are free to take questions right now. Joining me in the room today is John Eales for Technical DOS Marketing and Amy Tabenkian, System Z Sales. So feel free to pose some questions, and we'll get right back to you.
And our first question will come from Richard Press.
Hello.
Hello.
Yeah, hi. Good presentation.
Thank you.
Chart 27, Workload Manager, Trickle Support and Promotion of Canceled Jobs. Will that be available for ZOS 1.7 anytime soon?
Hi, this is John Eales. No, I don't believe so. I believe that will start on Release 9.
Okay, thank you.
And we'll now move on to Bruce Potter.
Hello, how you doing? Enjoyed the presentation. A quick question, will there be appropriate levels of SMF records to support the Zip and Zap engines vis-a-vis capacity planning?
I'm not sure what you mean about whether there'll be appropriate records. The time spent on Zip and Zap is already reflected in the Type 30s.
Okay, great. Thank you.
And ladies and gentlemen, once again, if you'd like to ask a question, please press star 1, and we'll pause for just a moment.
And while you're thinking, also as a reminder, if you like DOS 1.9 presentation and you're considering migrating to it, we'll be hosting a migrating to DOS 1.9 call early next year. So keep an eye out for that conference call coming up in the future.
And Ms. Gruberg, it appears there are no further questions at this time. I will turn the conference back over to you for any additional or closing comments.
Well, great. Thanks a lot, everyone. I appreciate your time and your interest in ZOS 1.9. I'll keep an eye out for the migration conference call I just mentioned. And a lot of times you folks might have some questions that come later on. I've included email addresses at the end of the presentation, so you can always drop a line as well. Thank you very much for your interest, and take care. Have a great day.
That does conclude our teleconference. Thank you very much for your participation, and have a wonderful day.